This week on Making Contact.
Knowledge isn't only held in urban centers and shared with the rest of the world. It actually can come up and bubble up in really amazing ways from small towns and rural communities, and we need to shift that paradigm.
Folks do not have the kind of information they need to understand even the economic proposals that are being offered by the presidential candidates.
Election coverage 2008, Your Streets, Your Stories. We bring you live from Main Street, the first of five town hall meetings that will take place across the U.S. this election year, hosted by award-winning journalist Laura Flanders. On this edition, what does it take to get your voice heard this election year in an era of big media and shrinking civil liberties? We go to Minneapolis, Minnesota to find out. I'm Sandina Robbins, your host this week on Making Contact, a program connecting people, vital ideas, and important information. On June 8th, live from Main Street host Laura Flanders went to Minneapolis to speak with a packed room of Minnesotans about how the 2008 elections will be covered by both the corporate-owned press and the independent media. Flanders is the host of Grit TV, a news program seen on Free Speech TV. Flanders' new book is titled Blue Grit. In the lead-up to the election, Flanders will be traveling to four other parts of the country, Miami, Denver, Columbus, and Seattle, to generate conversations about what people are doing to take back the political process. We'll also hear about what issues are most important to people in the different local communities. In other words, what's really happening on Main Street.
I'm Laura Flanders, and this is Live from Main Street. Live from Main Street had its inception as some of us thought about what kind of campaign coverage we were getting in this year. I don't know, what do you think of the campaign coverage so far? Funny that, we had the same reaction. Now, it's a truism in journalism and in media criticism to say that reporters cover elections like horse races. Well, why is that a problem? The problem, in my humble opinion, is it makes it look as if the only important players are those horses running around the track. Now, the message that sends is that power is something other people have, and democracy and elections are something that we participate in just once every 4 years or so with our vote. Well, here at Live from Main Street, we disagree. Because we believe that actually people are where the power is, and democracy and politics depends not just on once every 4 years our vote, but every single day our voice. That's the notion that inspires Live from Main Street, and it's certainly the notion that inspires many of you here in the Twin Cities. As I was researching for coming here, I realized, wow, we are coming to a hotbed of independent media activism. We're going to be talking about some of the challenges that the city is facing. We're going to be hearing from some of the city's fantastic civil rights and free speech defenders. And we're also going to be hearing about how independent media are rising to the challenge here and what we can learn from you. But let me start, I'm very excited, by introducing our co-host for the evening, a very special man I've heard on the airwaves for many years. He's the editor of Insight News, the leading African-American newspaper here in the Twin Cities. He also hosts a weekly show on KFAI. Let's hear it for KFAI, the community radio station. Al McFarlane. What I discovered about Al McFarlane since we've been hanging out the last couple of days is that for 8 years he hosted a public policy forum at a restaurant, Lucille's Kitchen. Now that's my kind of guy. Thank you, Al, for coming.
And Lucille's Kitchen was a greasy spoon in North Minneapolis, the best place to get real and be real.
We're going to see a video in just a moment from one of the key organizations in this part of the country, The Uptake. The Uptake both are looking at how the Republican National Committee is preparing journalists to cover the convention this September, and they tell you a little bit about themselves and their operation, too. Let's take a look.
So the question is, how many media does it take to cover the RNC? And the answer is, the entire upper deck. Take a look here. This is the entire upper deck of the Excel Center, and all of this yellow here, that's all media. 15,000 media people, according to the Republican National Convention. So here's the nifty spring media walkthrough guide that we all got, and it kind of gives you an idea of just how big this is going to be. Okay, here's
the Excel centers, and we mentioned earlier, this is all, the media stuff is in yellow. But then you get over here. This is the St. Paul River Center. You got the entire thing is media workspace. And up here, you got the entire Roy Wilkins Auditorium is workspace. There's NBC taking up half of it, and CNN the other. And then when you get on the ground level, you've got the News Hour, and you've got NBC News Channel. And, oh, man, there's the foreign press and the press filing center. And then even the parking lot across the street's been divvied up, which is why all of these people, mostly media, some of them from phone and service vendors, made their second walkthrough of the convention space. The first one was back in the fall. They asked about a lot of technical stuff and those other real important things.
Throughout the media complex, there will be some for cash food service opportunities that we've sort of evenly distributed throughout, you know, Roy Wilkins and the St. Paul River Center.
And those questions all had answers. But one question didn't.
I know you haven't set the security parameters yet, but our understanding is the protests might occur near the Seven Corners lot. Will we have access to those people after the security check or not?
The arrangements for any protest are between the city and those entities, and we're not a part of that. I can't answer the questions. I would tell you to take that question to the city.
Hello friends, Chuck Olson here for The Uptake. The Uptake is a nonprofit organization. We're dedicated to training and publishing the work of citizen journalists. St. Paul, Minnesota is where we have our offices. We're going to be able to set up some edit suites and get some camera kits and buy some Nokia N95s to gear up for the RNC, for example, which is right across the street from the Uptake's offices in St. Paul. So we're going to have a front row seat to the RNC. We see a huge opportunity for anyone to pick up a camera and go out and document a story that they might not be seeing on their nightly news. And in fact, our motto is, will journalism be done by you or to you? Not everything that's happening in the political world is necessarily getting on to your local news. There's a huge opportunity for anyone to pick up a camera and go out and find these stories, something you're passionate about. The Uptake will definitely help you do that and get your work out there. We want to have an army of citizen journalists out there with cameras, you know, with Nokia N95s, and document what's going on out there and basically hear from a whole range of perspectives, not just what you're going to be hearing from the very scripted event that's going to be the RNC.
We're back. You're watching live from Main Street. And funny enough, in that video from the Uptake, the RNC planners didn't mention anything about tasers, did they? Or did I miss that? When it comes to control of those who want to protest the RNC, they're a lot of people here also focusing on how we preserve civil liberties and free speech rights. We've got a whole panel of people who are free speech defenders here in the Twin Cities with us. Colleen Rowley, one of the country's most famous former FBI whistleblowers. Bruce Nestor is the president of the Minnesota chapter of the National Lawyers Guild. Marlena Gonzalez is program director of The Unconvention, about which we'll hear a whole lot more. Let's start with you, Colleen. What's a nice FBI whistleblower like you doing worrying about civil liberties in the Twin Cities?
Well, you know, something about the reputation of being a whistleblower is you got to keep seeing and telling the truth. And unfortunately, I had the really bad experience of seeing some terrible calamities happen and now some terrible mistakes since 9/11. So I've more or less devoted myself to this cause of peace. And we are planning a lot of things, of course, to get this message across that we need to change the country's policies and get some more sanity back into our lives.
And did you see a connection between the kind of climate of fear and secrecy that you were up against when you were trying to point out the failures of the FBI pre-9/11 and the climate that we're in now?
Well, you know, as an FBI agent, I can well understand this issues of protest versus terrorism. But there are big lines between those, and we cannot afford to blur those. And it's incredibly important that we have the police have training. I know you mentioned tasers, and we've actually had people talking on radio stations here about using machine guns. It's quite incredible. We don't want anyone to be scared, of course, in this country of America, to be afraid of exercising the right to march, to hold a sign. I can see it from both sides from my background in the FBI.
Going to the National Lawyers Guild, you're pretty busy right now. I think you're training people just about every night of the week. What have you learned from our experience in New York? It wasn't pretty.
We've learned the need for people to really be proactive in terms of we're expecting large numbers of arrests. We've also really trying to work against the whole picture of protest as somehow a threat to security, and that's how law enforcement wants to define it. I think that's how they defined it going into New York, and we're trying to resist that, to put the politics back into a convention that the mayor of St. Paul says is just about business. It's about whining and dining the corporate media, the delegates, but we say that the right of citizens to speak up and to protest, to not get arrested and to sit in detention for 3 or 4 days, to not confront tasers, is really part of that.
What do you think, Paul? Just what should be the role of the media in framing this relationship, the responsibility of the protesters and of the police? How should that be discussed in community?
So far, the whole media frame locally, it's not quite as bad as some of the tabloids in New York screaming about the anarchists threatening to disrupt the city. But the frame of the media is still that the protests are somehow aberrant and a threat to the process of bringing the convention here to the Twin Cities. We're going to block traffic. We're going to interfere with hospitals, block emergency vehicles. The reality is that the RNC and the city of St. Paul has turned over to the RNC and the corporations paying for the convention the two parking lots that you saw on the uptake video. Those are the best places for people to demonstrate and have sight and sound access. And the disruption to the traffic that's happening, I mean, they signed a contract with the RNC. A month later, we put in a permit application, and we were told, well, you can't get a permit until 6 months before the convention. 6 months before the convention, they told us, well, wait another 2 months because we have to figure out how you're going to disrupt traffic. Mm-hmm. The city's been turned over to the corporate-sponsored RNC, and the protesters, the citizens, are really an afterthought.
Will there be lots of arrests? What do you think?
The police promise that that's not what they want to do. We're training hundreds of legal observers to be out there on the streets to document what we know, what we believe the police will engage in. In November of 06, they arrested people outside the Mexican consulate protesting the repression in Oaxaca and charged them with a statute that seemed to come from the late 1800s about moving your vegetable cart and blocking the sidewalk. All those charges were dismissed as soon as the city prosecutor looked at it, but again, it got those people off the street, and it made it, you had to have a lot of courage to even think about wanting to stand up.
Coming to you, Marlena, the unconvention could provide an alternative, actually free space for people to express their views of the choices this country is facing. What will it look like? What's the organizing behind it? And what's going to happen there?
Well, we've been organizing since last year. It started out with a pool of different organizations who wanted to use artistic, educational, or alternative journalistic means to provide freedom of expression and the tools of expression to the people. The slogan is unscripting the political process. And if you go to the unconvention.com, the front page is actually a blog where people could upload the different kinds of activities that they're doing around the country and in the Twin Cities in terms of responding to the Republican National Convention, the Denver Democratic National Convention. So the series of artistic, educational, and journalistic events and workshops and citizen journalism and public installations and art exhibits and performances are going to be the means that you, the people, we, the people, are going to take over the streets, are going to take our video cameras, as Chuck Olson was saying, as we're going to upload them to our website. The unconvention is going to be kind of being hubbed at the unconventional gathering place, which is Intermediate Arts on Lindale Avenue between Lake Street and 28th Street. And there we will have several flat screens where we will be uploading videos and photography and audio feeds from various citizens that are inside the convention center as well as out in the community. So it's pretty exciting because people have come up with the most creative ways to use media as a means. There are 3 mobile broadcast units. These are bicycles created by students from the University of Minnesota, and they're equipped with computers and microphones and video cameras and digital taggers. These are laser tags that we will be using to tag different buildings temporarily through powerful projectors so that people can express themselves in public places. We're doing front yard sign competitions where people are being asked to design front yard political signs. We're doing YouTube PSAs so that people can call I approve this message, and it's the people's message. We're using digital mapping where we're going to try to measure the emotional ups and downs of people during the election period and uploading that through a digital map of emotions that's going to be uploaded on the website. So there's so many different creative ways to do this. The newspaper and the media is one way, but you all have the capacity to imagine how you want to be heard more effectively than without being unscripted or censored.
All right. Colleen Rowley, Bruce Nestor, and Marlena Gonzalez, thank you so much.
You're listening to Making Contact, a production of the National Radio Project. If you'd like more information or for CD copies of this program, please call 800-529-5736. You can also download programs, get our podcast, or listen to the full town hall meeting at radioproject.org. We now return to Live from Main Street, hosted by Laura Flanders and Al McFarland, produced by the Media Consortium and adapted for radio by Making Contact.
And the question we're going to raise is how is independent media giving voice to ordinary people? And we're going to ask what's happening right here in Twin Cities that can possibly be viewed as a model for other communities and cities. Malkia Searle is a writer, a veteran organizer, and the executive director of the Center for Media Justice in Oakland, California. The center works with youth and communities of color across age and region to transform the public debate on race and poverty and to support media accountability. Joel Kramer is the founder of the nonprofit Men Post, which provides daily online news and analysis by professional reporters. And Joel is the former editor and publisher of our own Star Tribune. Joel. Paul Smelster is the managing editor of the Minnesota Independent. Formerly, it was Minnesota Monitor. The Independent is an award-winning independent online news daily that features original investigative reporting. Paul. And Amalia Anderson is the program director for the Main Street Project. One of the main goals of the Main Street Project is to broaden the conversation about rural America's future and to provide ongoing information and news support for financially challenged rural newspapers and radio news stations. Thank you all for being here. And Joel, let me start with you. Twin Cities has always had an especially vibrant, independent media environment. So what's going on here? Why is it so?
Well, I think it's partly that we have a tradition here of civic literacy that's greater than the rest of the country. It's still not nearly what it ought to be, and civic literacy in the country is a serious problem, but we do have more here. We've always had high civic engagement, high political activity, high voting levels. We've also had very good traditional media, locally owned for decades, that made a model for what can be done by good professional media. And I think a lot of that is now disappearing. Unfortunately, the major media are not locally owned anymore, but rising up below it is an even more vigorous new media, partly because of the internet. The internet cuts both ways. You know, it's hurting the traditional media, especially print. Mm-hmm. There are a lot fewer professional journalists than there used to be in the country because of that. But it's also opening the doors to all kinds of new stuff, which I think is really exciting.
So what's the model for Men Post?
Well, our model is different from a lot of the new stuff happening on the internet, because ours is about a commitment to professional, full-time journalists. And we started Men Post because of a concern that there are thousands fewer journalists in the country every year. In the Twin Cities last year, the two papers alone lost more than 100 journalists between them. So we started a non-profit model, which is based on a combination of advertising and donations. It's all serious journalism. We say, you know, no Britney, no Lindsay, no Paris. But it's a challenging model because people are going to find, as we're finding, it's not easy to even get to break even on the internet. It's very important for the public to begin to support nonprofit journalism as a community asset, because the for-profit model is not very promising on the internet. Mm.
Malkia, let me come to you for the sort of national picture. I said at the top that these campaigns get the coverage, but it doesn't really go to the campaigns, it goes to the candidates. What's your take on the job that the media, the all-about-profit media, are doing covering this election so far?
Well, you know, in coverage of the election, you notice that, you know, the issue of gender was front and center. The issue of race, however, fell to the background. I think one of the things that is really important about how this election has been covered thus far is that it begins to transform how we understand what Main Street is. Main Street today is a different street than it was 20 years ago. It's a different street than it was 50 years ago. In order to have the right kind of policies for our nation, we need a media system that's actually gonna give people the information they need, for example, to understand the subprime lending crisis, to understand why people all over this country are having their homes foreclosed upon. Folks do not have the kind of information they need to understand even the economic proposals that are being offered by the presidential candidates. I mean, when people have that kind of information, their positions change on immigration, their positions change on criminal justice. They begin to actually integrate a full context, a full historical understanding about what Main Street is today and how we can make it the best place to live for all of us.
So, why don't you jump in here and talk about the model of Minnesota Independent, and why is it important then to have citizens engage, understand, to know and support investigative journalism? Why did you create it? What's the reason? What's the impetus?
The reason behind Minnesota Independent?
Yes.
We kind of felt that there were some stories that weren't being told locally, and we just happened to sort of coincide with the sort of downward spiral of the local dailies. It wasn't a response to that, but it just happened at the right time.
Like what kind of stories?
We were the first place to write about the contributions that Norm Coleman received from DCI, the firm that had did PR work for the Burmese junta. We write on other things that don't get picked up by the mainstream press quite so much, like ballast water issues in the Great Lakes, invasive species. We had a great reporter named Abdi Ayente, who was a Somali Muslim man, and he has since gone on to the BBC, so I guess Minnesota Independent, BBC. But he was he's really a fantastic human being and a good writer, and by the fact that he's in this community and speaks the language and knows the religion, he was there to cover some of the flaps that you read about with Somali cab drivers refusing passengers at the airport because of their religious convictions. Stuff like that.
Amalia, why don't you jump in here and talk about then your role, your mission to broaden engagement and to create more opportunity to use media.
Well, obviously, I think that for rural communities, small towns and rural communities, they play an incredibly important role, have always played an incredibly important role, and continue to play an incredibly important role in the history, the economic vitality, and just the wealth of what the United States has to offer the rest of the world. And people all over the country can identify with being from a small town and rural community, and indeed, the rest of the world can identify with that. And as we live in an increasingly transnational and global age, it's important to have those connections wherever one might be in the world. And of course, one of the things that we're seeing in rural communities is that news isn't really about the rural community anymore. Syndication, consolidation, lack of journalists who can actually make an affordable living in these towns is really limiting the stories that are told. And there's just nothing like having someone who's from a community to really offer the story, because it gives the context of understanding what it is to be part of that people, what it is to be part of that geography, and of course share information that the rest of the world knows, but do it with a heart, do it with soul, and do it with the connections that people are talking about today that really move people to create that change that we're looking for.
Picking up on what Malkia said about who is Main Street, let's not restrict ourselves just to sort of urban areas. Give us some examples of where the kind of coverage you're talking about makes a difference. I have a friend in the audience, Laura Ross, who works with Women Run South Dakota, mm-hmm. and it's an organization that's helping women candidates, particularly Native women candidates, run for office at the local level on the Democratic side in that state. Her version of what was happening in 2006 was so different from what I heard elsewhere. It was like night and day.
Right.
What do you get from listening to the media that you've got your ear to that we
are missing? Well, I think, you know, the media that comes out of the community that's really owned and shaped by the community tells that story of the change that's happening. So you don't see the coverage of the Latinos painting the panaderias with go vote signs. You don't see the stories of the tractors and the small trucks and the cars that are dropped low with the sign saying get out and vote. For so many of these communities, whether they're eligible to vote or not isn't the issue. They want to engage in the political process. They have a perspective they want to share, and they want to let people know that they're here in this country to make a new life for themselves. Particularly in rural communities, that's a lot of Latinos now. And I think it's important important to tell those stories and to shape immigration in a way that's not just about an either or, you know, newcomers and oldcomers, but to actually talk about, no, we're here, we care about this town, we have something to say, and we want to share it with the rest of the world. And I would say the last part is that these are models people should be learning from. You know, knowledge isn't only held in urban centers and shared with the rest of the world. It actually can come up and bubble up in really amazing ways from small towns and rural communities, and we need to shift that paradigm.
All right, some of the questions that came from you in the audience. How can RNC protesters and anti-war protesters get better coverage? And why didn't the media pay more attention to racist and misogynist and sexist coverage in this election campaign? Who wants to go first? Malkia, you want to pick a question to answer?
Well, I mean, I'll talk a little bit about why, you know, race and gender were so avoided in coverage of this presidential election. And I, you know, bottom line is this. It's not a new strategy to pit gender issues and race issues against one another to distract people from the real issues of health care, mm-hmm. poverty, education, you know, why the U.S. is continuously in Iraq and in every place else in the world violating people's mm-hmm. sovereign rights. The question here is, how can we get our media system to focus on folks' position on the issues? And the other question, I think, is, you know, which is really important. I mean, absolutely, the way the media treated Hillary Clinton was atrocious. It was atrocious. It was atrocious. That cannot be denied. That cannot be denied. But in fact, the way both candidates did not say anything, the way Hillary did not say anything about the media's treatment of Barack Obama with regard to race, and the way Barack Obama said nothing about the media's treatment of Hillary Clinton with regard to gender, is also atrocious. That is also atrocious. And, you know, the bottom line here is that, you know, I want to know, will the next president of the United States use the war against Iraq to win votes, or will they stand in opposition to it? I want to know, will the president of the United States, what will their positions be around immigration? Will they support the illegal raid, the ICE raids on our communities on undocumented immigrants, or will they oppose them? Mm. I want to know if we'll have a healthcare system that's going to work. Those are the issues that I hope our media system focuses on and that our journalists focus on, and not the stereotypes and bias around race and gender that fueled this election.
Amali, one of the big questions that people have on their minds, and we've got a couple of versions of it here, is how can people in the alternative media like yourselves reach that so-called mainstream, which I also think is us?
I think it's a lot of it's about relationship building, because you're not going to put time and energy into something that doesn't serve a purpose that you have already. One of the things that I see in communities, particularly immigrant communities, is the sense that, well, we don't need to be there because these are ineligible voters. And a simple reframing can be, they're not ineligible voters, they're potential citizens. And that's a very different way of looking at what's going on in these communities, and to understand for candidates and for all people in communities, you need to take the time, you need to build these relationships, and understand that fundamentally your destinies are tied together.
All right, that's the final word from this panel. I'm Laura Flanders with Al McFarlane from the Women's Club of Minneapolis. Thanks for watching. This is Live from Main Street. We're coming to a street near you soon.
That's it for this edition of Making Contact. This Live from Main Street was the first of five town hall meetings that will take place across the U.S. this election year, hosted by Laura Flanders, produced by the Media Consortium, and adapted for radio by Making Contact. You can find out more about Live from Main Street by going to our website at radioproject.org. For a CD copy of this program, call the National Radio Project at 800-529-5736, or you can get our podcast at radioproject.org. Lisa Rudman is our executive director, Tina Rubio, executive producer, Andrew Stelzer, producer, Puck Lowe, associate producer, Elena Botkin-Levy, and Aubrey Green, interns, and I'm Sandina Robbins. Thanks for listening to Live from Main Street on Making Contact.